Hey there, people. My name is Renee MPT Cray, and welcome back to the Great YA Quest. My teen years are far behind me, but I am still on a quest to read and rate young adult books, usually that have to do with romance and things that I generally don't care about. And I am trying to find ones that I can honestly rate 5 stars. So thank you for coming back and joining me again on my quest. This is the 3rd installment that I am recording, and it's more importantly the last installment that I'm going to be working on before releasing this out. So if you've made it to this point, that means you've listened to everything I've recorded so far and close to 2 hours of my ranting and rambling. So thank you for putting up with me. There will be more to come. To kind of thank you guys for being so patient while I put this all together, I went on to my Instagram stories a little bit back and I asked you guys to choose which book I should read and rate next in my search for a 5-star book. In those polls, I showed you some of my young adult overstock and I asked you to choose which book I should read and rate next because I can't. I've got literally an entire book cart shelf that's just young adult. And that's not counting some of the ones that I have already like hidden in my other regular bookshelf. And since I put up those polls, I've actually bought like 3 more young adult books. So, you know, send help as is necessary. But I wanted to have you guys choose which one you would be most interested in me reading and rating. And it was from the beginning almost pretty unanimous. What you guys wanted. You chose Reflection, which is a book by Elizabeth Lim, and this is a book that has been sitting on my shelf for almost 2 years, and I've just kind of never gotten to it. So you guys were very clear that you really wanted that one, so I went ahead and I read it, and I reviewed it, and we're going to be talking about that today. The book is one of the Twisted Tale Disney series. If you haven't read the Twisted Tale series, they are a series of books. I believe each one is by a different author. And each takes a classic Disney movie and it gives it a twist by putting the main character in some sort of difficult and slightly macabre situation. There are a few other Disney book series out there. This is the one that when you look at the covers, they're all really bright and they're all drawn and each one will have the main character in like a silhouette form in front of it. This is not the one that has the half face of the characters. And I've seen those a lot too. This isn't that one. It's the other one. From what I've been told, if I understand correctly, the one that has the half faces of the characters, they all kind of work together to become part of like one overarching universe, if I understand correctly. These are all individual stories that take place within just the world of the movie. So they are all essentially standalones, but they're called the Twisted Tales series. I'll be honest, I've never been much interested in reading either of these series. I am a massive, massive Disney nerd. I love everything Disney. But the thing is, I love Disney so much that I never really saw the need to have books that expand on them. It's like the movies, for the most part, are generally so awesome that I don't really see why I need something to expand upon those worlds further. But the only reason that I made an exception for this particular one is because this book is about Mulan, and Mulan is my absolute favorite Disney film of all time. I know for most people it's a very difficult question to ask, like, what is your favorite Disney movie? But for me, it's always been very easy. My favorite Disney movie and one of my all-time favorite movies is definitely, definitely Mulan. It taught me a lot about ideals of feminism that I still hold today. And it's just an epic movie. The way it's put together, the music, the story, the characters, the acting, everything about it, even the animation, the way it kind of looks like it's Chinese calligraphy, this is just a beautiful film from beginning to end. It's one of my absolute favorite films, like I said. So anything that has to do with Mulan, I kind of have to check it out. It's like another compulsion that I need to see it and make sure that it's up to my standards, if that doesn't sound too pretentious. But yeah, I have to check out anything that's Mulan. I take it pretty seriously. So as I had said before, there is a slightly macabre question that is put into each Disney twisted tale that makes it twisted. And the question that Mulan is given here is, what if Mulan had to travel to the underworld? If you don't remember the movie, Mulan certainly did not travel anywhere other than Earth. She saved China by defeating the Huns. But yeah, she definitely never had anything that was really otherworldly, any sort of experience like that. But if you don't remember the movie, what are you doing? Like, stop and go watch it right now. It's on Disney Plus, and I think it might still be on Netflix. So go watch right now. But for the meantime, I will introduce you to our characters. So in the film Mulan, we have our main character, Mulan. She is a young woman in ancient China who wants, first and foremost, to do what is right. And that is a distinction that will become pretty important later. She wants to do the right thing. That is always her focus. And for her, in this particular time, that means bringing honor to her family by getting married and bearing sons. This is what's expected of her in ancient China. But Mulan's really having trouble with this. She's klutzy and she is just kind of, she doesn't really have like a Belle moment where she's longing for adventure in the great unknown or anything like that. She just doesn't quite fit in to that perfect porcelain doll mold that is expected of her in this time period. So she, you know, from the beginning, no matter how hard she tries, she's never going to be this perfect wife. Now, when her injured father is called to war against the Huns, she knows that he's not going to survive. There's just no way that he's going to make it. So she does what she knows is right. She has to take her father's place. Being a woman, she is not allowed to enroll. And if she were to be found in the army, she would actually be killed. So she disguises herself as a male soldier named Ping, and she takes her father's place. In this book, when we start out with Mulan, her insecurities and her kind of struggle with herself, like being timid, being in that situation where it's like you're trying to do the greater good, but you are in a situation that's way beyond you. I feel like Mulan was reflected for the most part pretty well. So from the very beginning, when I was reading the book, it felt like it was true. It felt like this could be, if Mulan was in this situation, the Mulan from the movie, if she was put into this situation where she's suddenly in the underworld, the decisions she made and the way that she acted were for the most part pretty accurate. And that was my number one fear with this book, that they would try to just kind of dull Mulan down into this typical, you know, the YA heroine that we always see where they're like, I'm tough because I'm tough. And they really didn't do that. The author, Elizabeth Lim, took care to really present Mulan as a rounded character, one who is the same one that we see in the movie, who has fears, who has, you know, insecurities, but is just working past them because she has to do the next right thing. So I appreciate the care that she took in not just dumbing Mulan down to another stereotypical heroine. And I say that it was done well for the most part. We'll get into it a little bit later at the end. There were some decisions that they did with Mulan's character that weren't particularly my favorite. But for the most part, the Mulan that we see in the movie is pretty decently reflected here. So in the film, as well as in the book, we have the character of Li Shang. Li Shang is the captain of Mulan's division in the army. He is the son of a famous soldier, and he is very, very capable. He's this guy who has grown up around military his whole life. He is a perfect soldier, and now he's in charge of this division of the army that kind of sucks. So his initial problems with Mulan in the film are her klutziness and her inability to be an effective soldier are really wearing on him. But in the film, he really starts training with his men and he becomes a very likable character because he puts in the extra effort to really try to get his men where they need to be. So he's very similar in the book. He is looked on as a mentor. He is looked on as a friend. He's a very noble person, someone to whom his role in life seems to just come very, very easily. So he's kind of the opposite of what Mulan has had to deal with so far. But he's essentially the same character in the book as he is in the movie. Those two are very, very similar. But as far as characters from the movie go, that's essentially all we get. Mulan and Li Shang are the only primary characters from the movie that also cross over in a significant way into the book. Mushu is mentioned as well as all of Mulan's friends from the army, but they don't come into play in a big way. Again, they're just kind of mentioned in passing. So really those two are the only ones that are carried over from the movie to the book. So we have some new characters that are primary players in the book that we have not seen in the movie. The first one is Shishi. Shishi is basically what Mushu is, or well, I should say what the Great Stone Dragon was supposed to be for the Fa family is what Shishi is for the Li family. Shishi is Li Shang's guardian. He was Li Shang's father's guardian before him. He takes the form of a giant lion. And when Mulan meets him initially, he's in kind of like his big stone dramatic form. But throughout the book, he just looks like a normal lion, albeit one who can talk. He is sent by Shang's father to help Mulan in her soldier disguise as Ping through the underworld on her mission to find Li Shang. Now, this was one of those characters who started out pretty well, but he wore off on me relatively quickly. Shishi is kind of snobby in the beginning, and he has this self-assured, very English butler sort of quality that I really found to be initially very entertaining. But after a while, it's the same sort of thing over and over again, and the book was just a little bit too long to maintain that same sort of character who's reacting the same exact way in pretty much every given scenario. So he stopped being funny and his snobbiness just sort of became a little bit annoying. And I think a big part of that was how seriously the other characters always took him. Like, his mane gets cut and he's like, "Oh, my beautiful hair." And everyone's like, "Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, it'll grow back." Whatever. It's like, cut it out. You're an immortal guardian and you're really freaking out about your hair. Like, we're in the underworld. We have bigger things to worry about. So I don't dislike Shishi as a character. I just think that maybe this book was a little bit too long to support him, and that we could have gotten a little bit, we do get some development from him, but it comes a little bit too late in the game. So Shishi was okay. He wasn't anything amazing. I certainly would not replace Mushu with Shishi. Our next original character is Meng Po, and she is known in the underworld as the Lady of Forgetfulness. So she lives there and she is responsible for brewing and serving a tea that, when consumed, will make a spirit forget all of their past life so that they can be reborn and live an unburdened, reincarnated life. She is the closest thing we get to a villain in this story because she's constantly just dogging Mulan and Shang and always trying to stop them. She does have some motivation. It is revealed in the end. It wasn't the best, you know, and it was kind of stereotypical YA sort of stuff. I think when you are looking at this book as in this is a Disney book and therefore it should be a Disney villain, that's where she kind of falls flat. She's just not really unique in her motivations. But she was cool as a character because she does really never give up. She is a shapeshifter, which is neat. And yeah, she wasn't bad. Again, she's very much like Shishi, where it's like, not bad, but after a while starts to become a little bit predictable. So not awesome. So probably the last character that I have to mention is just one who is very briefly in the book, only in the beginning and at the end, and he is King Yama. So he is the ruler of the underworld. He's basically the Hades in this situation. He makes a deal with Mulan at the very beginning, but like I said, other than that, he doesn't really come in until the beginning and the end. So you kind of would have to know who he is for plot purposes, because he's mentioned a lot throughout the book. But he's not really a principal player. Meng Po, like I said, is the big villain of this story, not King Yama. He's just kind of there. So that's our primary cast of characters. We don't have a lot of characters in this book. There are other ones that are, you know, smaller characters that get introduced, but as they don't really have any major bearing on the plot, I'm not really going to go over them. Let's just jump right on into the plot. So like I had said before when I was telling you what this story is, this is a twisted tale. So this picks up at a moment in the movie and it takes the plot of the film off on a very different direction. This particular story starts right in the middle of the action, which I do appreciate. I had expected that it's going to be like, all right, we're going to have 50 pages of getting to know Mulan and all this stuff. And Elizabeth Lim really doesn't do that. She just jumps right into the action, which I appreciate, because she's probably assuming correctly that if you are reading this book, you probably have seen the movie Mulan before. This picks up right at the pivotal moment when Ping, aka Mulan, has used up her regiment's last cannon by firing it into a snowy mountaintop. This causes an avalanche that just decimates the attacking Hun army. Mulan's quick thinking by firing their last cannon at the avalanche instead of at Shan Yu, who is the Hun leader, it ends up destroying the Huns and saving pretty much everyone. Now, in the film, during this act of bravery, Mulan is actually attacked by Shan Yu and she receives an injury. And it is that injury which will eventually lead to her discovery of being a woman. She's basically saved China, but then it is revealed that she is a woman, and all of a sudden, she's back to being considered almost worthless, and she is left behind to go home because you can't have a woman in the army. That's what happens in the film at this section. Now, in the book, Mulan does the same exact actions. She is taking the cannon, she runs away from Shang, she sets off the cannon at the mountain, sets off the avalanche, everything exactly the same. The only difference is that while attempting to kind of stop her or save her, Shang gets in the way of Mulan and Shan Yu, and it is Shang who receives the blow. And it is a much more severe attack. Shang is almost, he's basically been fatally wounded instead of kind of the little slice that Mulan gets in the Disney movie. So after this point, the book sets off on its own course with Ping / Mulan taking care of Shang, who it becomes very clear is going to die. He is not going to make it. So she is taking care of him and she falls asleep in the tent at night. She's trying to keep watch, but she just gets so exhausted she falls asleep. And when she wakes up, she sees Shang's father. Now remember, Shang's father, he has been killed at this point. He is dead. He got wiped out by the Huns. So she sees his ghost visiting his son and basically saying like, oh, my son, you have so much more to do, which is kind of weird because like you're a ghost too. I don't, maybe you would want your son back. I don't know, whatever. Won't question the dead guy's motivations. He's all sad because his son is dying. And she speaks and tells him that it was her fault because Shang got in the way and she should have been quicker. She blames herself. She should have seen the blow coming and been able to get away or something. And that now Shang, this good man, has taken a blow that was meant for her and he will die to save her. And if she could do anything at all to save him, she would, is what she tells the dad. Now, moment of appreciation for this old geezer, because he takes Mulan seriously. And he's like, really? You want to save my kid? Sweet, let's do that. And he sends Shishi in his giant, you know, stone lion form to kidnap Mulan and just take her straight down to the underworld before Mulan really has any idea what's going on. So yeah, he sees an opportunity and he takes it. He's like, all right, save my kid because I don't want my kid to die. Go, young soldier. So off she goes. This introduces us to the setting of the mythical Chinese underworld, referred to as Dayu. Now, going into this, I knew nothing about the Chinese afterlife in mythology. So this was actually pretty interesting. This was a very unique setting. I did a little bit of reading up afterwards, and it seems like it was pretty decently on point with at least the concept of what Dayu would have been. So that was really cool. Dayu is a series of levels. So it's in that way, it's kind of akin to what Dante presents hell as, if you've read Dante's Inferno or heard of that. It's a series of levels, and each level represents a different stage of hell. Now, these can literally just be all different types of tortures or just different places for ghosts to live. It's kind of flipped around because level 100 is where King Yama lives and where you want to be before you either go to heaven or before you are reborn. So level 100 is basically the top and level 1 is the bottom. So we have a flip going on there. Each of these levels contains something different. We don't get to see a lot of the levels here. When I was looking up Dayu, it seems like, of course, the mythological version was way more intense than what we see here, because we only get to really see like one or two levels where actual torturing things happen. But in the mythology, like, this place would make Tartarus look like a children's play area in the mall. So some of the most intense levels that I found while I was researching Dayu are the Hell of Tongue Ripping, the Hell of Scissors, specifically scissors, I don't even want to know, the Hell of Boiling Faces, Hell of the Pit of Cattle, so I don't know if that's where Mufasa is or if that's just too soon, Hell of Sawing, and Hell of Maggots. So these levels do not, like, you would not want to get stuck in this place. And I get that they wanted to make this, a little bit more Disneyfied, family friendly, but I do kind of wish that we would have gotten more detail right away about the intensity of Dayu, because I didn't really take it seriously when they're in there and, you know, the demons and the ghosts are all telling Mulan like, oh, there's horrible things in these levels, but they're not specifying what it is. When I went back and just kind of read an overview of Dayu afterwards, I was more like, oh shit, you would not want to get stuck here. So I kind of wish that the author would have set that up a little bit more, just letting us know and establishing really how much Mulan is risking by coming into Dayu, because this place is messed up. You would not want to go there. It's horrible. So when Mulan comes in, Shishi ends up getting her inside and she forces her way to an audience with King Yama. Like I said, this is the Hades of this situation. She ends up making a deal with him. She wants to find Shang. She feels like Shang should not be here. He took this blow to save her and China needs him, because he's not done helping China. So China really needs him, and so she thinks that it is a morally justified thing that she must get him back. And like I said, it must be her who gets him back, because it was her fault, you know, per se, that he is here. So she needs to get him back. Therefore, she makes a deal with King Yama, and she says that, listen, I will get Shang out of Dayu, and if I can get him out of Dayu before the next morning, it's just been nightfall in the land of the living, And so if she can get him back up to and out of DU before morning in the land of the living, then Shang will live and she will also live. So she's basically got 12 hours to find Shang and get him out. If she fails to get Shang and get him back up to level 100 and get him back out, then not only will Shang die in the land of the living, but Mulan herself will have to remain in DU as a demon. So she will not only lose her physical life, but essentially her soul. So she's putting it all on the line here. And King Yama, of course, agrees to this because, you know, two for the price of one. I was really ready, like, okay, now we're going to have this sort of thing where Mulan's going to go through and struggle with all these different things. And we've got to find Shang and then we've got to get Shang back up. And it's going to be a race to the finish. This book has set itself up very clearly in what its plot will be. And I don't know if it was an attempt to buck that expectation, but this was the first place where the plot actually really threw me, because except for like one little detour, Mulan finds Shang almost immediately. Like, she leaves King Yama's palace and she's wandering through this forest that's getting her all turned around. She gets some help from Shang's ghost dad, who is just hanging around for, I don't know what the rules are with this guy, but he's like hanging around and tells her like, oh, if you find like King Yama's face hidden in a level and you touch that, it'll teleport you to another level. So he shows her where this thing is in this forest level, and she touches it and she is immediately transported to the place where Shang is. So I was kind of disappointed in that because, like I said, I thought it was going to be like the goal is find Shang. And so we're going to have Mulan like on her own, really on her own for the first time, because she ran away from home, yes, but she was still in an army. She was still with a group. Now it's just her. And we're going to have to see how her training holds up, and she's got to find him and then rush him back up and get them out in time. And instead, it's just so easy. She walks into this room and there's Shang, and he's just reflecting on his past life before the Lady of Forgetfulness visits him and gives him the tea that he will drink so that he can be reincarnated, because he's like a good person, but I guess not good enough to go to heaven. Like, he's just good enough to get reincarnated. So Mulan finds Shang immediately, and it is him. It's not like a fake specter. It's actually Shang. And she talks to him for a while and convinces him that, yes, it's really her. And off they go. So the initial goal of getting Shang is achieved with almost no difficulties, which I don't know if this was like the plot trying to be what you don't expect, but I did not like it. It's like, this is way too easy. Come on. But off they go, and they run out of this room. Shishi is waiting for them, and they run away from the tower. And then all of a sudden, you know, because you know something's going to happen, because we're like barely a third of the way through the book at this point. And this is, you know, a 300-some page book. So you know something's going to happen. And it takes the form of just a random earthquake or something. The bridge they're on just crumbles. And Mulan and Shang and Shishi just fall, like free falling straight down into DU. And now they're going to have to fight their way back up to the top, which is, I just feel like that's so rushed and such a lame excuse when you could have had Mulan on her own, or, you know, with Shishi, trying to find him. And that question of, it would be cool to be like, well, where would he have been hidden? Like, I get that if everything was going according to plan, he would have been waiting there. But if King Yama made this deal, wouldn't he have hidden Shang? Because now we just have like, oh, now they've got to fall into the pit of hell, because we have to have something for them to do to get out. And that just seemed rushed to me. Like, we could have done better here. But as it is, they fall straight down and they land somewhere in DU and they don't know where they're at. So when they kind of come to, the three of them realize they have landed in a beautiful garden. There is an old lady there, which, first of all, I mean, never trust an old lady in any horror, anything. Like, don't ever trust an old, random old lady. But there's a random old lady who has a garden in hell. Pretty meta, but, you know, she's got her garden in hell. And she's like, oh, let me serve you tea. And these three bozos are like, well, we don't trust you, but I guess we kind of have to. It would be rude. No, never accept tea in hell from old ladies who grow flowers literally in the pits of the brimstone world. Never do that. But they do. They're at this woman's old tea party, and she tries to get them to drink this tea. And Mulan starts realizing something's up. Like, listen, old ladies don't just hang out in hell serving tea parties. That's weird. And it comes out that this is actually Meng Po, that lady of forgetfulness who was supposed to visit Shang. She lives way down in Diyu, apparently. And she's trying to trick them. She's trying to get them to drink this tea because then they will forget everything about their lives on Earth. They will stay down there with her. The time will run up. They will both lose. But they figure it out. Off they run. Apparently, this old lady has a horde of demons at her control because what else would you have at a garden in hell? So she sends the demons off and the demons chase them all away. They run. This is really the beginning of the adventure. From here on out, they run into ghosts. They run into demons. They have to go up a mountain of knives where Mulan discovers a knife that is somehow magical, which is, you know, fine. But literally you pick up the sword and it says on the blade, the flower that blooms in adversity is the most rare and beautiful of all. And it's like, that's just, I just thought that was kind of a cringe way to put a classic line from the movie in there. Don't have magic inscriptions on the blades. Just, we don't need that. But anyways, Mulan finds this magic sword. They have to call on members of the Fa family who let everyone know that they have no record of a Fa Ping, just a Fa Mulan, which leads into a discussion between Shang and Mulan in which Mulan reveals the truth of her identity to Shang. Now, as they've been going through all these adventures, Mulan has been struggling with whether or not to reveal herself to Shang because he trusts her and he keeps saying like, oh, I trust you. Oh, I trust you. Right. It's playing on that moment right before Mulan's injury was revealed in the film where he says, you know, you have my trust. So he keeps like basically saying this, I can't believe that you would come down here for me. I trust you. I trust you. Oh, Ping, you're my friend. And she's like, oh, shit, I'm lying to him. So she feels really bad. So when the moment arises, she decides to take that opportunity. And there are a lot of false starts where she's like, I'm going to tell him. I can't tell him. I'm going to tell him. I can't tell him. It's like, oh, my gosh, just do it. Just do it. I don't care. Take the hairband out of your hair. Show him your boobs. Whatever you have to do, tell him. We're done with this. Finally, she tells him. Now, in the movie, her secret is discovered because of her injury. So if that hadn't happened, I don't know if she would have revealed herself. We didn't have this tension of should I, shouldn't I. But I think in the film, with the way things were, if she had not been discovered, I don't think she would have, right? Because, like, I understand why morally she would want to come clean and she would feel bad about it. But for Mulan, like I said, it's always about the greater good. And in this case, the greater good was saving her father. So I don't think she would have jeopardized her father to come clean about a lie to Shang when she had to kind of lie to save her father's life. I don't know. Personally, I don't think she would have told, but who knows? Here, you know, it's set up that she feels so bad about lying that she just is compelled to tell Shang and she is compelled to come clean. And when she does this, Shang is so offended that he's been lied to that he leaves Mulan behind to make her own way. Again, this is a play on the movie, right? Where he also leaves her behind. But that was on Earth.
And he gave her food and basically said, like, go home. And he could have killed her, right? In the movie, he should have killed her for her deception. But he says no because she saved his life. So he repays with a life for a life, and the debt is repaid. So he gives her food and lets her live and basically says, go home. And it's kind of implied that he's not going to reveal her secret to anybody else. So that was on Earth. I understand why he left her behind on Earth. This is in literally the pit of hell. And she will become a demon if she doesn't get out. I don't remember if at this point he knows that or not, but I think he knew something of it. So he leaves Mulan behind. And I think his reaction is just way too far over the top, and it's just a way to add tension by separating them, which is a good thing to do. But again, this tension wouldn't have already been here if it had just been more of a quest for her to find him in the first place. So yeah, the drama is starting to become a little too contrived and forced. It's not annoyingly so, but it's just getting to that point where you're like, what? No, wait a second, right? I mean, I probably could have called a spoiler alert before this, but I think from this point on is where we're going to get into more heavy spoilers. This is going to be towards the end of the book. Up till now, they've just been, you know, journeying and whatever. And we all knew that eventually Shang would find out Mulan is a woman because it's in the movie. So from here on out, I'm going to call spoiler alert. This is where I'm going to just talk more about the ending and how everything happens. Now we have Mulan on her own, because of course Shishi, being the lead guardian, has to stay with Shang. Now she spends a lot of time reflecting about how she had really hoped that Shang would understand her, and I guess this is just destroying her mind in some sort of way. She just takes it really hard, which I understand. You know, this is not to belittle that or anything, because if you thought you could trust somebody and you told them, like, hey, you know, I'm a woman, and they responded like, oh, well, yeah, like you would be, you know, duly offended. But she just is so preoccupied by this that she must have lost her mind a little bit, because she decides to take directions from a fox, which if you've ever read any story, fable, whatever, with the exception of Zootopia, also from Disney, you would know that you cannot trust a fox, right? In anything mythical, just don't do it. This fox ends up leading her into what appears to be her own house. It's her own house at home. Mulan's house, I should say, not the fox's. She gets to now that she's back in her familiar settings, back at the beginning of her journey, she gets to reflect on the difficulties that she had while growing up, with feeling like she can't fit in anywhere, that she's trying to do the best she can, but no matter what she does, she's just not good at anything. And at this point, it is revealed that the fox is Meng Po, right? So this is the Lady of Forgetfulness again. She was the fox in disguise, and now she is in this kind of dream setting, taking up the place of Mulan's grandma, who is a badass in the movie. But she's taking up the place of Mulan's epic grandma here. And Mulan is basically given the opportunity to drink the tea, forget everything, and just sink into sweet oblivion. So that's what the Lady of Forgetfulness is offering her, like saying, listen, you've never done right by anything. You always try and you always fail. So drink this tea and all your troubles will go away. You won't have to worry about doing the right thing. You won't have to worry about whether or not you bring honor to your family or if your father is ashamed of you, because guess what? I'm sure he is. So just drink the tea and forget it all. Mulan is kind of thinking about it, and she's under the lady's spell when Shang comes back. Shang has seen the light. Probably with Shishi just like giving him some little English butler jabs and being like, master, what are you doing? So he comes back and he talks Mulan out of it. And once they get away from the Lady of Forgetfulness, he admits that he's been a massive butt munch face. And they all escape and they're all friends again. And guess what? It turns out they're on level 97. So now remember, they need to get to level 100. So they're only 3 levels away. magical. Unfortunately for them, level 97 ends up being a lava monster level. Literally, it's like all lava and there's a big lava demon there. So they have to fight that off. And they almost die a bunch of times, but of course, you know, not really. We kind of know at this point they're not going to die. They get separated. Mulan is surrounded by a bunch of demons. And this was a really irritating part for me because we're in the middle of this battle. And to be fair, the author writes battle scenes pretty well. She adds in a lot of detail and, you know, she just writes battle scenes pretty well. She doesn't skimp out on the detail. You can really see it in your head. But Mulan gets separated and she's surrounded by a bunch of demons. And we stop in the middle of this scene to have all the demons just talk and say all these lines about, I love killing people. It's been so long since I've like had, you know, human flesh, basically. And it's just like going on and on for paragraphs. And we're like, what are we leading up to? Because first of all, I judge the demons for not attacking since they want the people blood so badly, but they're not attacking to get the people blood. And then I judge Mulan because if you're a trained soldier, you're going to stand there and let the enemy talk about how much they want to drink your blood and you're not stabbing them with your magic sword? I mean, come on. So it's clearly leading up for something. And what it leads up to is this moment where Mulan lets down her hair and reveals herself to be a woman to the demons. And all the demons go, oh shit, a girl! And then she kills them. Now, we'll talk about this scene later, but yeah, we have to have this scene where Mulan, she's basically accepting herself as a woman. And from here on out, she fights as Mulan, not as Ping. And yeah, they make it past the fire demon, all alive. After this, they get into the city of the dead, which is where ghosts wait before going to heaven or getting reborn. So if you are a good enough person where you don't have to be tortured, you know, you don't have to be on the hell of scissors anymore, you have a city of the dead. So Mulan, Shang, and Shishi are basically almost there, and it's somehow still night, which is good, if not a little bit improbable, because this has been going on for so long, and like, they're like, oh, we still have time. It's like, do you though? That's odd. Apparently, at this point, the only way to get out of this level is to pass through the Hall of Mirrors, which I guess from what I've been looking at, seems like it really was an actual thing in DU, which is pretty cool because that definitely fits with the theme of Mulan, right? We have a whole song in the beginning of the movie called Reflection. And that's basically the fastest and only way out of this level, right? Because there's no other way out of this level except to wait for King Yama to call you. And clearly he's not going to call these three. So someone needs to go through the Hall of Mirrors, kind of like symbolically for the group. And of course, Mulan has to be the one to do it. This is her quest. This is her mission. She has to be the one. Ghosts can't really go through, so Shang can't. And, you know, Shishi would just kind of fail at that. So Mulan offers to go through the Hall of Mirrors. I thought this scene was really cool. One of the strongest scenes of this book. It presents Mulan with not only a bunch of situations where she sees the worst of herself, all of her friends hating her, her father and her mother being ashamed of her, just failure every which way, which was touching because that's so often, I feel like, what we all see when we look in the mirror. You just see the negatives. It also shows her all these different versions of herself, herself as a soldier, herself as a bride, herself as like all these different scenarios. And she needs to choose which one is really her. So unless you truly know yourself and your own soul, you will not be able to pass the Hall of Mirrors. It's a really nice scene. It was done really well. I felt like it fit perfectly with the theme of Mulan. So mega props to the author for that scene. I would say that was my favorite scene of the book. So she makes it out and she wins her own life as well as Shang's. As per their bargain, King Yama returns them all to the living world. And at first, everything seems the same. Mulan wakes up and she's back in her disguise as Ping. Shang is still lying there, seemingly, you know, like a codfish. But he makes a miraculous recovery. exactly as King Yama had promised. So everything seems back to normal. The only thing is that Shang does not seem to remember his time in the underworld at all. When he wakes up, he's just kind of like, oh, you know, we made it, good for us. So Mulan's kind of disappointed at that because, you know, she likes him. And that's been implied throughout the book. Not in a super cringy way. It was pretty well handled. But yeah, she really trusts him as a friend. She was glad that she was able to tell him she was a woman. And now it seems he doesn't remember. Of course, though, his memory starts coming back. And he kind of asks her, like, oh, I had weird dreams while I was almost dead. And she starts, like, filling in the pieces of these dreams, being like, I also had these dreams. And then he's like, oh, it wasn't a dream, was it? Whoa, Inception! And so, of course, he now remembers everything. And with him remembering everything, he remembers that Mulan is a woman and that he can trust her. And, you know, it's implied that they will probably be a thing. Exactly the way that it's implied in the movie. You know, just kind of like, maybe, probably. And that's pretty much where the book ends. That's the ending of it. So it picks up essentially where the movie would have gone, with them all heading off to China. And we all know, or I should say, to the Emperor's Palace in China. So we all know that, of course, Shan Yu will be waiting there for them to crash the Emperor's, you know, old man swanky party. But they're going to take care of it because they're the last surviving army, yada, yada, yada. Everything continues on as normal. So that is the end of Reflection. Now, I know I had a lot of comments as we were, you know, going through this plot, but I'll be honest, I don't actually dislike this plot. It's way better than a lot of the other ones that I've read because it has one goal and it just works towards that one goal, right? And we've talked about this in some other episodes, and if we haven't talked about it already, we will talk about it in future episodes. Because a lot of times young adult books, they start out being about one thing and then they become about another thing. And it's like they don't know what they want to accomplish. And in this book, it's very, very clear. Find Shang, get him out. Everything else that happens is an offshoot of that. So Mulan's character development and her relationship with Shang, that is never a priority. That evolves as part of the main quest, very much like it does in the movie, which is cool because, as I have definitely said before, girls don't ever get that in YA. Girls start out on a quest and then everything drops when the hot guy comes in, and then the new quest is the hot guy, and nothing can happen. The girl can't have character development or anything until the hot guy bones her. Clearly, that is not the case with Mulan, and this book really stayed true to that. She has one goal, and she keeps working at that. Find Shang and get out. So the plot is not bad. It's very straightforward, and I like it. It's just weirdly paced, because after that initial push of Mulan getting there, like I had said, Mulan should have struggled a little bit more on her own to find Shang. I feel like finding Shang should have been that first, like, level up. Like, oh my gosh, we've worked so hard, we found him, and now the second half is going to be harder. So I thought it was just weirdly paced throughout. The other thing that might have helped the plot seem not as slow would be if they had used the ticking time clock element that they already had in place, right? So the ticking time clock element is a thing that will keep the story moving. And I actually learned about this when I was watching behind the scenes on Princess and the Frog, right? Disney does this a lot in their movies where they will say, you have until midnight to on this day to get a kiss from a princess. Otherwise, you're stuck as frogs for another year. You know, you have until this day, Cinderella has until midnight before she will turn back into a peasant woman. So we've got this ticking time clock, and doing that will keep a plot moving because you've got this thing that they can constantly look back and be like, how much time has passed? how much time has passed. We had that in place with the 12-hour gap. You have one night to find Shang and get out. And they have this moon up above that you can always see in the underworld where you can look up. And depending on the shadow of the moon, that tells you how much time has passed. Pretty much exactly like in Coraline. But they barely ever use that. Like, no one ever talks about how time is passing. If it is, it's in just very casual ways. There's maybe like two or three times in this whole book that they look up and they're like, oh, we still have time. Oh, we still have time. And it just made it seem very much like, oh, they're always going to have time. They're never going to be rushing. They're never going to be close to the end because no one cares about this. And using that element to kind of give the characters a little bit more anxiety and push them to move harder and faster and just get there sooner would have made the plot a little bit more tense, which would have been nice. So they had the elements in place. They just, it just needed to be shifted a little bit. And I think that this really would have stepped up. The other thing that I would tweak if just a little bit, if I had the chance, you know, I have said that Elizabeth Lim writes action scenes very well. And for the most part, I do very much enjoy her writing style. But she would sometimes delve into these short sentences, which was weird. And it almost felt like she was trying to dumb the writing down. And I don't know if maybe she was trying to dumb the writing down because it's for like a younger audience, or if she was just like adding stuff in to try to meet a page count. I don't know. And she just was throwing it in there. But we've got these really great lines about Mulan fighting and all this stuff. And then there will be things like Mulan sailed right over his head. And she gave a mighty roar. He laughed. And it's just short, choppy sentences that just the way they were put together was so simple. You should never say the lion gave a mighty roar. Just don't ever use that. Come on. So, yeah, her writing style was good, but it wasn't consistent. My last final bone to pick with this, and this is going to be major nerd rant here, so just be prepared. In the last bit of the book, the last real quarter of it, I thought it came off as almost desperate to tell a story about Mulan discovering herself. So it does that in a bunch of different ways. First, Mulan reveals herself to Shang, then again to the demons, then again she reveals her true self in the Hall of Mirrors. And we have this repeat just over and over again of Mulan being true to the fact that she is a girl and she must embrace her womanhood and no longer lie about that, which is not a bad message, right? Don't get me wrong. That is a very good message, but it's clunky and it doesn't feel like it fits Mulan. And I think that's why we had to have Mulan accept herself so many times, because none of them, except for really the Hall of Mirrors, felt real. We need to remember the basis of Mulan's character, right? She doesn't run away because she's ashamed of being a girl. Remember, in the beginning of the movie, when they said that you will bring honor to your family, do what's right by getting married, she tried. She would have done that. She's not ashamed of being a woman. She's not like, I will never get married. She wants to do what is best, what is the right thing to do. She fails at those expectations that are set up for her as a woman. And then the opportunity presents itself for the next best thing to be save your father's life. So she does what she needs to do. Mulan is not ashamed of being a woman, at least not consciously. She mentions later in the movie, right, that she wanted to see value in herself, but that's not her main motivation. Her main motivation is doing what is right, which means that essentially she gets that coming of age story that all the boys in YA stories get, right? That I'm always complaining about, that girls don't get a full quest and discover themselves as a result of that. Girls only get to discover themselves when they have the romantic interest. But Mulan here just tries to do the right thing, and she goes on an adventure, and because of those actions, she discovers who she is. She has come to know exactly who she is. She is important to her family. She is loved by her parents. She is capable as a soldier. She is Fa Mulan, who is a woman. That's why Mulan's message of feminism still works so incredibly well. It's saying, know me as a person, not as a bearer of boobies. She requires a simple, balanced equality. She is not looking to prove that she's better than the boys and out there looking to be tough. For Mulan, if doing what's right requires being tough, then Mulan will be tough. If doing what's right requires being gentle, then she'll be gentle. As such, she ends up encompassing both of these traits. She, in the beginning, is just as eager to serve her dad a cup of tea, which is a very feminine thing, as she is to pick up a sword and defend him. She will just do what's right. This book is at a disadvantage because without the reveal of Mulan's gender being forced on her the way it is in the film, she doesn't have the same opportunity to simply do what's right regardless of personal consequence. Now she has to choose her reveal, and it's, instead of it becoming this Eowyn moment, it's just clumsy because it's not necessary, right? And I mention Eowyn because she also had a big reveal like that in The Lord of the Rings, but remember, Eowyn hid her gender because she was almost ashamed of it. She felt she couldn't do anything of value as a woman. And so that's why her embracing her femininity by saying, I am no man, is such a powerful, powerful moment. Mulan never hid her gender because she was ashamed. She did it because that was what was necessary to do the next right thing of saving her father. So having these big moments, especially the one where she lets down her hair to fight the demons as a woman, it's just, it's not a bad thing. It's just clunky because it's not Mulan. And because it's not quite Mulan, it takes this story from being one that is her particular brand of equal feminism. And it just becomes this slightly frayed message of girl power, let your hair down and embrace your womanhood. Again, not a bad message, just one that is a little too loud and obvious to mesh with Mulan's message of do what you are meant to do and don't let anyone else's expectations of what you can or can't do hold you back. Just do what is right and you will find that strength. You don't have to be a guy to accomplish that. Overall, I give this book a rating of 4 out of 5, which is pretty good for YA, and, you know, considering how picky I am, as you just heard about my Mulan stuff, I feel like that's a pretty fair rating. I think if you're a fan of Mulan, you'll enjoy this book. It's a pretty good representation of Mulan until her big hear me roar moment at the end, but honestly, you might not even notice that unless you're an over-analyzing nerd like I am. The plot is slow, and I think that the events could have been reshuffled to add more tension, but again, at least the events were there. They could have just been reshuffled a little bit. I did for sure enjoy getting a little introduction to the Chinese underworld. That was really interesting. The setting was really awesome, and it was just nice to see something that's, you know, not set in the Greek world again or anything like that. I did enjoy learning about Duyu and getting a little taste of Chinese mythology, which, you know, like I said, does seem like it's watered down, but it seems like it's decently accurate as to how they presented it in this book, which was very cool. If Mulan isn't one of your favorite characters, first of all, you know, reevaluate your life. And second of all, you might not enjoy this book quite so much, but I would say it's still worth it to check out, especially with the live action Mulan coming out. It's a great way to get reacquainted with Mulan and to see her in some different situations than what you see in the film. And, you know, we can only hope that the new movie does her justice too. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Great YA Quest. Please let me know if you read this book. Do you agree? Do you disagree with what I said? Did you think this book was awesome? Or did you think this book was it and that I was being too generous? Have you read any other books in this series, in the Twisted Tales series? And if so, what did you think? I'm not planning on pursuing this series any further. Like I said, I just picked this one up because Mulan is, like, the best. But yeah, let me know if you've read any other ones. I know that they're still coming out. It is a pretty popular series. So update me on any that were particularly good. Maybe I will check them out. You can reach out to me on my Instagram. I am on there at Renee MPT Cray. And let me know if there are any other young adult books of any type that I should check out in my search for the great five-star read. Thank you again so much for joining me, and I will talk to you guys next month when we continue on our quest. Bye.